So apparently it's a bad idea to put corn husks in your garbage disposal. It sounds like you guys all kind of know that. You guys are all silly grown-ups that all know this kind of stuff already. I learned it the very, very hard way this week. I don't usually do corn. It's not one that I regularly do. It's a hassle food, for sure. But like, cause you got the outside that you don't eat, and then there's like this tiny layer where you eat, and then the middle that you throw away. So it's a hassle food, but you can't argue with like six for a dollar, which is what I found. I don't even know how the corn folks are making money at that point, but so I bought it because it was cheap, and I looked up a bunch of different ways to do it. We were barbecuing it, and so the husks get all kind of burnt up at the end, and then you have to find a place for that. Did you know? Fun fact here: did you know that they on the trail in the prairie, the pioneers, they would make dolls out of the corn husk, the little corn husk doll, and that was entirely so that their kids wouldn't actually throw them in the garbage disposal. They had to just make sure they kept them sitting. But I threw them in there. I threw them in the garbage disposal because I think like that's a magic machine that just anything that goes in there, like lemons and potato peels and glassware, all these things. Glassware. You Anglican, that's like the biggest response I've ever gotten from a sermon. Anyway, not glassware. So listen, I thought I could fix this, right? I thought this is an easy one to fix. I'm not calling a plumber. You know what you should do? If your garbage disposal isn't working, just you run it forever. That's like I turn it on and it didn't go, so I turn it off. And I tried it again, and I turned it off, and I did that. You know the definition of insanity, right? So it wasn't working, and I was getting frustrated. And the sink was getting fuller and fuller of water, and Jack even came in and he's like, "You really shouldn't do that." Like, I know. I got Drano. I tried Drano. I put that. Come on, you guys. It says safer garbage disposals on there. I put some Drano in. That didn't work, but our house smelled like bleach for the next 24 hours. That didn't work. I got a plunger. New. I need to mention that it was a brand new plunger, okay? That's important to the story. And I'm doing that, and I'm working, and I'm frantically working to fix this. Apparently, I should have called all of you because you all know the right answer. Finally, I gave up. I sat down on the ground. I sat down and I opened the cabinet underneath the sink and there's like one pipe that I just unscrew and I take off and I clean it out and it works perfectly. And it's the worst kind of repair job because no one was around to see me actually successfully do it. But I was like, I did it. Not all heroes wear capes. Like I felt like such a superstar for fixing this thing. But all it took was for me to stop and sit down and stop being so frantic about things. That was my Mary and Martha moment this week. Just as a point of order as we start, I will definitely get their names mixed up through the sermon. I always do that. I'm a bit lexistic about these things, and I'm going to switch their names. So correct me as I'm doing that, please. I give you permission. Apparently, you guys don't need it if you give me all the answers on how to fix a garbage disposal so clearly. It's kind of funny because this story does not take place chronologically. We know that because we know where Mary and Martha live. We know that as Jesus is heading toward Jerusalem, as we hear about in the gospel from last week, he's not really near Mary and Martha's house. Mary and Martha live like 2 miles from Jerusalem. And that's not really where he is geographically, and therefore probably didn't happen chronologically in this way, which is allowed. It's totally allowed in gospel stuff. The thing is, there's always a reason for it. And if you think that the gospels are written so that we would believe, so that we would have an accurate account of Jesus' ministry, there is a reason for why it's placed here. If it's not chronological, it's not geographical, then there's a good chance there's a theological purpose for why it's put in this place. And a lot of people believe that the reason it's placed where it is because it's the sister gospel to the story that we read last week. In other words, it's a mirror to the Good Samaritan reading that we did last week. If you recall the story of the Good Samaritan, we talked last week about, you know, I've always preached that as a go do good things. And I've always thought about that as Jesus is showing us how to be good to others. But at the root of that story, I think, is that Jesus is giving this guy the gospel. And he says very clearly in the story, you know, the word for compassion that we talked about last week, only attributed to Jesus throughout Scripture. And here it is that the Good Samaritan has compassion, shows mercy. That mercy, the word is this idea of like jumping into the skin of another and experiencing what they are experiencing. Very incarnational. And I think what Jesus is doing in that gospel, the parable from last week, is saying, look, you know, in the same way that I am the light of the world, I am the bread of heaven, I am the way, the truth, and the life, I am the Good Samaritan. I come, while despised by many, and I see people like this rich man, he's a religious teacher, this religious teacher who thinks they know all the answers, but in reality, they're lying half dead on the road. And Jesus comes, rescues this person. And remember the words that it says? He anoints this person. He gives them satiates his body by giving him wine. And he rescues him. He carries him and rescues him and he restores him. And then he tells the innkeeper, whatever is owed, I will repay when I return. Isn't that Jesus? And Jesus is saying, I am the Good Samaritan. It's not about doing good in order to be saved. It's about following the example of the Good Samaritan, Jesus Christ. And this gospel that we have today is a mirror image of that passage. It deals with this idea of grace versus works in a real, tangible event that happened in the ministry of Jesus. And it's probably why our brother Luke put it in at this time. Jesus is traveling and he goes to the house of Martha and Mary. She's listed first. She's probably the owner of the house. The situation where she would have been a homeowner is unique, and it probably meant not good happened. Either her parents died and she was unmarried, or her husband died. And that's why he's not listed as the homeowner. So something bad has happened here. Martha's had to go on it alone. And as Jesus enters into the house, Martha's cooking up a storm. She's making this enormous feast. Why does she do it? I mean, we're not really told what her impetus is, but I think the impetus for her motive for doing this is really something bad, because it ultimately leads to her resentment and anger. You know, no good root creates a tree that has that kind of bitter resentment to it. So what could it be? I wonder if she's thinking back on this account of Abraham entertaining the angels here, the servants of God who come, and she says, well, I'm clearly Sarah in this story. I got to get to work here. At the root of that is really a desire to be impressive. I'm going to impress these people. I'm going to show Jesus, you know, this huge banquet here. And people are going to say, you remember that meal at Martha's house? That was impressive. Maybe it was because of resentment at the root. You know, if I don't do it, who's going to do it? Somebody's got to cook for these people. I guess it's me, right? I think we've all kind of been in that position before, too. If I don't do it, who's going to do it? It's up to me. And we go and do. I'm a doer. I love to do things. I love to-do lists, to scratch them off to say, I did these things. I make to-do lists that say, make to-do list on the top as one of the things, so I can cross that off at the start and say, I did something. I love to do. And doers run into this problem all the time of picking themselves up by their bootstraps and doing the thing. I wonder if maybe she was a little nervous to sit down. You know, I think we've all encountered that situation where maybe Jesus is going to say something that's a little bit difficult for us. So maybe it's better to kind of walk around him rather than sit with him. You know, maybe I just get that grace through osmosis by walking around and doing rather than sitting and listening. Whatever the impetus is, it's enough of a bitter root that causes this resentment to grow. I just imagine the situation where you're starting to hear pots and pans getting louder and louder in the kitchen, like things getting slammed, and you just hear like a, maybe Mary will pick up on these signals, and it doesn't happen. And eventually it gets so bad, this anger bubbles over in Martha that she goes and she yells at Jesus and says, "Jesus, isn't it stupid that my sister's doing nothing and I'm doing everything?" And she makes demands on him. Tell her to get to work. I don't think I'm that different than Martha. And I think at the root, it's sort of this microcosm. Her life is a parable. You know, in the same way that the prodigal son is a parable, she decides in the midst of all of this that she's going to go at it alone. She's going to do the work. She's going to be the one that's impressive. She's entertaining the servant of the Lord, and she's going to make it good. And as she does that, she realizes she doesn't have the strength. The impetus for what she's doing is a bitter root. She gets so angry, so frustrated, that she comes to Jesus and says, "Help me, Lord. I can't do it alone." That's all of us. It's all of us who have said, "I can handle this. I can do it. I can make something impressive." And Jesus speaks to her in a very loving way. Our translation picks up on this by saying, "My dear Martha." But in the translation that a lot of us know, it's Martha. Martha. Repeated in a way to say, "My sweet one, my child. Martha, Martha. Your sister has chosen the good thing, and it won't be taken away from her." Jesus very, very lovingly says, "Just sit down." Right? Why do you have to be so impressive? Why do you have to do? Do you see how this is a reflection of the Good Samaritan here? It's not about doing. It's not about being impressive or having the guy with the most good deeds on your list at the end. It's about sitting down and listening and following Jesus' example. We do anyone a disservice if we give the implication that to be a Christian is to do more. You know, churches try to boil it down into like a three, like a know and grow and go kind of thing. And you break it down into those kind of things. There's some wisdom in that. Because you can't just go and then know and grow. And you have to get the order right. Lori and I were a little nervous because she asked me last night, she's like, break your sermon down into one sentence, what is it? And I said, "Just sit down." And she said, "Is it a problem that our closing hymn is Rise Up Then?" And I said, "No. No." Because that's the blessing of it all. That's the gift. We don't do in order to receive. We have received so that we can go and do. Right? That's the story of the Good Samaritan from last week. We know because Jesus has shown us what rescue looks like. So we go in reflection, in response to him, not in order to receive blessing or receive salvation, but simply because we have been blessed, so now we are blessed to share Jesus with others. Sitting at his feet, reflecting on him, just sitting down and listening, will ultimately, I believe, lead to all of us rising up and going and doing the work of the kingdom. But to just go and do for the purpose of doing, I think is a complete misread of the Good Samaritan and a complete misread of the account of Mary and Martha. So here's my encouragement to all of us here. All of us who feel the need to just go and do, or all of us who are feeling the need to like stop. Just sit down. Just sit down at Jesus' feet. Just sit down and listen. If you are feeling like you don't know which way to go, which direction to go, left or right, up or down, whatever it is, sit down. You can't do when you're sitting. Martha couldn't continue to cook her meal while she was sitting down. That's what Jesus is calling her to do. Just sit down. And I guarantee that as you sit at the feet of the Lord, your call will become clearer and clearer. But if you go and you do, it's so much harder to hear and listen to his voice. My grandpa, second time I'm quoting him this week, used to say that the Holy Spirit can't hit a moving target. Yes, he can. But he's also a gentleman. He's also the one that waits on us to come and listen. And I know that when Jesus entered the house of Mary and Martha, he knew from the very beginning that this was going to happen. He knew that there would be this uproar and this turmoil and bubbling within Martha based on her desire to be impressive or just stop moving or whatever was going to lead to this holy kerfuffle where he might say this thing: your sister's chosen the right. Martha, Martha, just sit down. Just sit and listen. Just stop. It's not about what you can do, but what I have done for you. So let's just sit. Let's listen. Let's encounter him at table today. And as he's spoken to us and he's given us that call to go and do, we rise up, knowing that the Lord is the one who has called us out.